they doing? Smiling in your face.
This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. It is hard to believe that June 12th will mark the 20th anniversary of the death of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. Nicole Brown Simpson was the woman married to football star and actor O.J. Simpson. Ron Goldman was a waiter at a restaurant nearby who somehow got caught up in whatever happened on that warm June night in Brentwood, California. O.J., of course, was charged with the double murder, but he was acquitted by a jury in Los Angeles in what many still consider to be a shocking verdict. Certainly, the Brown and Goldman families didn't like it. They then filed civil charges against O.J. and got a massive judgment against him. But I don't think that they've seen any of that money. Ron Goldman's sister, Kim, was 22 years old at the time. So now, after two decades, she's been living almost half of her entire life without her brother. And she says in a new book, she can't forgive. In fact, that's the title of the book, Can't Forgive, My 20-Year Battle with O.J. Simpson. It's got some new revelations in it and some open wounds that still haven't healed. She's here to talk about it now. Kim, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks, Paul.
In the book, you say something rather amazing to me. You wrote a letter to O.J. about 3 years ago while he's in jail serving that 9-to-33-year sentence for kidnapping and armed robbery in Las Vegas. He's still got a few years to go on that. But you wrote him a letter in jail. What did you say?
Oh, I did. I wrote him a letter asking if I could see him, that I wanted to come for a visit. It was important for me to see him behind bars. It was important to see him small. He'd taken up so much space in my brain and in my life for so long that I wanted to reduce him in size to make him a little bit more manageable. So seeing him, you know, locked up behind bars, behind the glass wall, and having me be the one to finally walk away was really important for me. He never responded. I didn't get the opportunity to go, but just even writing a letter was pretty powerful and important in my healing process.
What would you have said to him?
It, you know, really wasn't about talking. It was just more of an imagery. I had this belief, and I still believe, that he's living large in there, even though he's behind bars. You know, he's like the mayor of police town, I mean, prison town. And so it was more of regaining control and standing tall and me having the right to move away, to leave, and having him be stuck behind bars. I mean, it was just more of a visual thing than anything. I don't think anything I ever say would ever impact him in any way anyway.
Yeah, his attorney nixed it. Is that what happened?
His attorney, Yoko Ancher, was not in favor of me going, tried to talk me out of it. I pursued it, and then ultimately he wanted me to agree to some confidentiality terms that I wasn't willing to agree to. Didn't happen.
You wanted to be able to tell the world about your encounter with him and how you left him behind in his orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, I didn't really think about what I was going to do with it, but I was more of just like, he said, you can't talk to your family, you can't talk to your friends, you can never write about it, you can never even admit that it ever happened. I thought, well, no. Doing that, because I'm not going to lie, that's not who I am. But I mean, I understand his reasoning, but that was just never part of my plan.
You also say in the book that there was a day that you saw OJ when he was still a free man after he was acquitted of killing your brother and Nicole. You were in a parking lot somewhere and you spotted him. And what happened?
It was roughly 17 years ago, so I want to keep that in perspective. I was driving in a strip mall parking lot, and a figure appeared before my car. I stopped, and I realized that it was him. I knew that, you know, his swagger. I knew every ripple in his head. I knew it was absolutely him, and I white-knuckled the steering wheel. I revved my engine thinking I was going to run him over, and then, you know, my conscious woke up and my reality snapped back, and I thought of my dad, and there's no way. I don't have those violent streaks in me. And then he just continued to saunter past my car onto his meeting or wherever he was going.
You thought that taking him down would make you on par with him?
No, at that moment I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking my brother, and I was thinking of all the emotion and rage that he had evoked in me. And, you know, we were still fresh. It was very raw still. It was very soon after the case. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I just had not had that opportunity. And, you know, I'm so grateful, obviously, that my I didn't go through with it. I just, like I said, I don't have that in me. But yeah, I fantasized about it, sure.
I'm glad you named the book Can't Forgive, because that's kind of my own philosophy. I've never been through the kind of trauma that you and your family have been through. But if I were, I would have to say, get away from me, to all the people who say, oh, you have to forgive. You've got to find forgiveness inside of you. Is that how you still feel 20 years later?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard for people to understand. I think people would like to, and I don't mean this to be negative, but people want to box it up. People want to, you know, make it okay. They want to make us okay for them to be okay, too. But, you know, I would rather have someone say to me, how do you deal with it? How do you cope? Because the truth is, that's a healthier conversation than me just saying, oh, yeah, I forgive him. Because then what have I done? I've given him a free pass. I've made it okay. He did an unspeakable thing. He did an unforgivable act. And so my job is to take my appropriate anger and manage it. And that's the healthy course for me. Like I said, it's appropriate. The anger that I feel towards him, my grief is appropriate, even 20 years later. But what's also appropriate is that I'm healing, and I go to therapy, and I have support system, and I run a charity for kids. I have a child of my own. I'm doing things to live a happier life. And I also have this to manage, and that's just something I can't change.
Right. I'm curious about one aspect of your life. You're a single mom, and
yes.
I'm sure you go out on dates. What happens when they find out who you are?
That's actually been difficult. I call it the big reveal, because there's really no other way than to just kind of throw it out there. I try to not share it immediately, because I don't want that to be the center of the conversation, because I'm trying to be a woman separate from Fred's daughter and Ron's sister. But it happens quickly, usually, because your normal questions are, do you have family? Where'd you grow up? What do you do? And I say it as matter-of-factly as I can, and then I've had men completely fall apart. They whimper and cry and can't contain themselves. I've had men want to save me from my life. I've had men feel incredibly inadequate because I'm on TV sometimes, and they feel like they don't measure up. It's been hard, because I'm just Kim in this, and my brother died, and I just happened to be on the news. Like, that's kind of in my brain how I see it, and I just... It's been hard in my professional life, too, but dating's been definitely interesting. And I'm also very cautious about people's motives, and, because I've had those situations, too, where people are just want to get in so they can be part of whatever's going on, and that's not good.
The world is full of leeches.
But there's also amazing people. I've had some amazing relationships as well. But this is just this phase of my life. And, you know, I'm also, you know, I have a 10-year-old to think of. And so my choices are a lot more strict than they used to be.
Do you hold a grudge against Marcia Clark and Chris Darden for blowing it?
No. I hold a grudge against the person that created the situation, the killer, his team of attorneys, the judge, the jury. You know, Marcia and Chris, it's hard for me, because they sacrificed so much of themselves, and they were the only ones advocating for my brother and Nicole. And I still have relationships with them, with members of the law enforcement team and detectives. You know, they put everything on the line, including, you know, losing their careers. And I just don't think that they thought to do anything other than fight the fight and to, present the evidence, as it were. And, 20 years later, of course, it's easy to see where they could have done it differently, but no, I hold them in high regard.
But you do hold a grudge against Robert Shapiro, Barry Sheck, Alan Dershowitz, and the late Johnny Cochran?
Yes. And Kardashian and F. Lee Bailey and Dershowitz. Yes. They didn't just defend their client. They were horribly, disparaging towards my brother, towards our family, disrespectful towards the entire process. I think you can try to defend your client, but then there's going above and beyond. And I thought it was pretty disrespectful and disgusting how they handled themselves. But ultimately, it worked.
Did your family ever get any of the $33.5 million that OJ was supposed to pay for you in restitution after the civil trial?
At this point, our separate judgment from the Brown family is now worth well over $40 million. And we've recovered less than 1% of that.
Wow. The book is called Can't Forgive, My 20-Year Battle with O.J. Simpson. Kim Goldman, thank you so much for joining me and sharing some of your story today.
Thank you for asking. Thanks. Appreciate having me on.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.